que les mando saludos a los niños y que sigamos luchando por una migratoria.
Gracias a la familia Cruz. Reportó para Senderos de Oaxaca, Cristina Ramírez.
Sí, bueno, aquí estamos de regreso en el estudio, en la cabina, y pues vamos a tener a Natalia con un poema, Natalia, en zapoteco, ¿verdad?
Sí, del libro El Dorso del Cangrejo, que acaba de ser publicado por la editorial Almadía, que es una editorial oaxaqueña. Les voy a compartir un poema corto, porque somos muchos invitados y veo el éxito que tienes con las llamadas y,
oh, gracias,
y las entrevistas, así es que...
Y una pregunta, este zapoteco, que ¿de dónde es el zapoteco?
Ah,
que
de Juchitán, Oaxaca, del Istmo de Tehuantepec.
Una de las variantes que existen en Oaxaca, ¿no?
Exactamente. Entonces, bueno, ahí va.
Oh, muy bien, te escuchamos.
Cabinizá. Ruyuben da anizayosho, bi jastika binigulasa. Najiegi gubiku, najieni sarutagunash kije, gidiru anisado vidiene zidigie. Najieski pinekashpa, rigalari zaja nagijilayu. Napanushkunda nikaza, jisiza jinibila. Los zapotecas. Busco en las nubes remotas la escritura de los antepasados. Amo el río de las nutrias, el istmo y su hundimiento, los labios del mar y su saladura, los ombligos y sus tumbas de jícara quebrada que se arrastran bajo la tierra. Tenemos raíces en las nubes, pero ellas son fieles al viento.
Un aplauso para Natalia.
Muchas gracias, muchas felicidades, larga vida a este programa.
Ay, muchísimas gracias, Natalia. No, pues te vamos a tener aquí, vamos a disponer un programa completo para cada uno de ustedes. Desafortunadamente el tiempo es muy corto y no podemos extendernos más allá, ¿no? Pues algunas palabras que tengas, Arsenio, para los paisanos y no paisanos que nos están escuchando en este momento.
Pues muchísimas gracias por la invitación y mucho éxito para tu programa. Pues el mensaje es sigamos unidos, trabajando, saquemos todo lo que traemos como oaxaqueños, esa unidad, esa responsabilidad que tenemos hacia nuestra cultura, y hay que seguir adelante, y yo creo que trabajando juntos podemos lograr muchas cosas.
Gracias. ¿Tú hablas alguna
mixteco,
lengua? ¿Quieres despedirnos en mixteco?
Claro que sí. Te chavindo nanicando chiminu shin son domino estación radio yo no cuenta mina yundova so nakainu tatu tundavi mina niño Ñundóvani.
Muchas gracias, Arsenio. Y pues vamos con Brenda. Algunas palabras para el público que nos está escuchando, Brenda.
Nada más, gracias por escucharnos y ojalá que nos den otra oportunidad para tener más oaxaqueños aquí invitados, ¿no? Y para que sigan escuchando también los paisanos de diferentes regiones radicados aquí en Los Ángeles.
Un saludo para Xochina, ¿verdad?
Sí, para Xochina, por supuesto, y está Xilalto también. Y lo único que sé decir es una de las cosas, yo es que no, gracias.
Gracias, Brenda.
Bueno, gracias Roberto por la invitación y un saludo a todos los paisanos aquí en Los Ángeles, de la Sierra, de los Valles Centrales, a todos los que estuvieron en la calenda hoy y a todos los que participan, ¿no? Jóvenes y no tan jóvenes, en las uniones, en las organizaciones culturales, políticas, todo eso, ¿no? Gracias por todo ese trabajo que hacen.
Gracias. Algunas palabras de despedida, Natalia.
Sí, cómo no. Muchas felicidades. Les deseo larga vida a este programa. Espero volverlos a ver pronto. Un saludo a todos los paisanos que nos están escuchando. Para mí es un placer venir aquí y compartir mi poesía. Sé que hay pocos juchitecos viviendo en Los Ángeles, pero me hace muy feliz venir. Somos una cultura. Somos una de las culturas más importantes de Oaxaca y del mundo. Entonces, ojalá que porque yo conozco a todas las organizaciones o a muchas de las que están aquí, se sigan hermanando para celebrar la vida, para estar juntos como en la calenda, como en este programa, como los programas que tienen en la defensa de los migrantes. En fin, me da mucho gusto ver el trabajo que hacen aquí. No es fácil, pero es muy importante. Así es que gracias por hacerme partícipe de todo eso.
Oh, gracias a ti y espero que nos podamos ver en la Guelaguetza, que es este próximo 6 de julio, ya faltan unos días, es el próximo sábado, iniciamos con esta...
Agosto, dice.
Perdón, este próximo... sí, es este próximo sábado, entonces esperemos vernos ahí, ojalá, y no te vayas a ir luego, Natalia.
No, yo voy a ir.
Oh, muy bien, pues por ahí nos vamos a estar viendo. Bueno, pues tenemos aquí a nuestras compañeras también que llegaron de La Calenda. Por ahí tenemos todavía unos minutos para poder hablar algo de La Calenda. A ver, tenemos a Alicia Arango, que es parte del equipo también de Senderos de Oaxaca. Tenemos a Cristina Ramírez. Cristina, Alicia, ¿cómo les fue en La Calenda? ¿Qué tal? ¿Estuvo bueno? A ver, ¿qué pasó?
Sí, venimos de La Calenda. Iniciamos en la calle de Pico con Crenshaw. Y para mí fue súper emocionante ver cómo respondió el público. A bastante gente, nosotros nos tocó manejar sobre la Pico y me encantó ver cuánta población oaxaqueña esperaba sobre la calle, la avenida de La Calenda. Y es una cosa tan hermosa porque a mí me tocó vivirlo en Oaxaca, cómo se van uniendo, ¿no? Empieza en un pequeño grupo y se va recorriendo y cuando te das cuenta ya es una multitud la que tenemos.
Alicia Caber.
Así es, Roberto, pues para mí fue algo muy bonito también como oaxaqueña, ¿no? Ver a nuestra gente, la unidad que tienen acá en Los Ángeles y ver cada esquina, ¿no? Que estaban esperando con ansias que llegara La Calenda hasta donde ellos iban llegando y pues muy bonito los colores de cada
traje regional.
Ajá, trajes regionales, las bandas de música.
Me imagino
y todo.
Que muchos niños, ¿no? Ahí en La Calenda.
Muchos niños.
Mucha gente. ¿Qué tal con los alebrijes?
Muy bonito los alebrijes también, ahí los llevaban también como hace un año, pero lo único que sí vimos, bueno, yo lo que vi fue que había menos gente que hace un año, ¿no? Pero muy bonito.
Bueno,
muy
pues bonito. Muchas gracias por compartir esto, ya nos queda poco tiempo, pues nos despedimos y no se olviden de escuchar el siguiente programa que es Contragolpe.
También queremos agradecer a la panadería La Espiga por su amable cooperación. Nos hizo un enviado de unos panes deliciosos que estamos degustando en este momento. Gracias, señora Guillermina y don Mario Cruz.
Muchísimas gracias y pues nos vemos en el siguiente programa.
Esto fue Senderos de Oaxaca.
Desde lo más profundo de nuestras raíces y nuestras prácticas tradicionales.
¿Sugerencias y comentarios?
Visite nuestra página de Facebook.
Como quiero a mi pueblo, por ser más que valiente, incansables guerreros de esta vida insolente.
Escuche Enfoque Latino, su programa para derrotar la indiferencia, todos los jueves a las 11 de la noche, aquí en KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles, 98.7 FM Santa Bárbara. Enfoque Latino, programa de línea abierta para los desvelados. Recuerde, Enfoque Latino, todos los jueves a las 11 de la noche. Y por favor, pase la voz. Este programa es parte de APE, Asociación de Programadores y Programadoras en Español.
Escuche Nuestra Voz, programa de información, análisis y cultura, donde su voz es la que cuenta. Todos los jueves a las 9:30 a 11 p.m. aquí, en KPFK 90.7 FM Los Ángeles. Nuestra Voz es parte de APE, Asociación de Programadores y Programadoras en Español de KPFK. Y recuerde, les esperamos todos los jueves a las 9:30 de la noche.
Hola, yo soy Gus.
This is Ward Churchill saying, get yourself a mind transplant. Listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM.
You ain't nothing but a hound. Been snooping around my door. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Been snooping around my door. You can wag your tail.
My God, you are in for a treat tonight. This is Quinoamp with DJ Crustacean on Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM or some long crazy streaming address that you can get via word of mouth for all of y'all not in Santa Cruz. At you can call in at 831-427-3772 if you would like to request some glitchy, wompy, nasty bass or shitty top 40. Or, hey, how about your bad folk punk EP? I would love to hear it, maybe. I'm going to get back to this, and in a second we're going to actually have some shit that smashes, but here's something that's still good.
That's all very well, but we're actually getting into Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, the August 4th, 2016 edition here in Santa Cruz. Can't tell you what's coming up because I really don't even know it myself, but we're going to be reviewing the past week or two. And who knows? We got an operational phone line so you can call in with your news. Be good if you did that.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle.
Edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides here until 8 o'clock tonight. And the call-in line here, which seems to be working for once. We got our volume knobs figured out thanks to the technical expertise of some of our sole remaining techies, Uncle Dennis and Al. I guess there are a few others around. And, oh dear, am I on here? Is this microphone giving me trouble? Little bit. I guess I can be heard. It's just not registering as much as it should. There we go. So we actually have a phone line that operates. Call in if you have some thoughts about what you're hearing, some news from where you are, announcements about upcoming events that you think are of interest to Free Radio Santa Cruz listeners, or just plain grumbling, grunting, and growling, whatever you feel like doing. The number is 427-3772, area code 831-427-3772. That's 427-FRSC, which, of course, is an acronym for our station, Free Radio Santa Cruz. So, there's a mime troupe event coming up, I guess, Saturday and Sunday, I'm told. I think it's up at Porter College. It's reportedly free, though I imagine the space is going to be limited. I was at the mime troupe last year giving out flyers about don't just go see a mime play, don't just look at a show, but do something about police abuse here in Santa Cruz and in the surrounding cities and across the country, but most particularly here in Santa Cruz. And I'm not aware that anybody did, but I put out the flyer, and it's got a bunch of outstanding issues that I've since referred to on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I'll probably refer to them again tonight, because I'm noticing on Santa Cruz Indie Media there is a critique of one of the organizations I'm always critiquing, or at least the leadership of that organization, or the inaction of that organization, and that's the NAACP locally. And I'm looking now to... we have a very screwy Indie Bay screen here at the studio. I don't know why this is this way, but I'm going to keep looking. Well, a couple of news stories. The news story I was mentioning is titled, and this is on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz NAACP to raise money for local police by Black Lives Matter in Santa Cruz, which I'm a fan of, not to mention Homeless Lives Matter and Black Homeless Lives Matter and so forth. But what this article says, for those of you who aren't online at the moment, Santa Cruz chapter of the NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, has announced it will be holding a fundraiser for, quote, law enforcement agencies and organizations committed to racial justice. The fundraiser has been called an NAACP Peace Party and will be hosted at the end of August in Santa Cruz at Garfield Park Community Church. The decision to raise funds for the police by the Santa Cruz NAACP is in direct opposition to the demands announced by the Black Lives Matter movement this week, which called for a reallocation of funds at the federal, state, and local level from policing and incarceration. And I'm not a really big fan of following any particular organization, whether it's Black Lives Matter, Communist Party, or even Huff, anybody, unless I think the particular program stands on its own merit. But I find this kind of dovetails with this concern about funding the police rather than defunding the police, which is what we need to do in Santa Cruz. The problem with a hammer is if you have it, you'll use it. And it's particularly true against homeless people, but equally true against racial minorities, if not more so. Although I think homeless people really get a lot of the hammer in Santa Cruz, as a relatively small African-American population, larger Hispanic population, and a lot of documented bigotry here, documented abusive racial profiling, but for sure endless class profiling. In fact, laws explicitly created to criminalize classes of people who are poor. You see this most recently, and perhaps most explicitly, in the RV ban that the Santa Cruz City Council passed in final form in May, and it's taking to the Coastal Commission to uphold it this coming Wednesday, and that's going to be August 10th at 9 a.m. in the morning up at the Hilton on La Madrona Drive. That's kind of, I think that's up Highway 17, if I'm not mistaken, although I'm going to have to do a little checking on that. But I'm concerned because I, at the suggestion of someone else, put together an appeal against this law because it's really on technical grounds that a part of the law covers the ban on RVs from midnight to 5 is in the coastal zone part of it. It's actually much broader than the coastal zone. It covers the entire city of Santa Cruz. And I don't think all the city is in the coastal zone, but a significant portion of it is at least a part of it. And my appeal to the coastal zone is going to be that if you do allow this to happen in the coastal zone, the Santa Cruz entire ordinance will be okayed, which will essentially criminalize homeless people throughout the city who are in their vans, whose only housing is a van. And you might say, well, what does the Coastal Commission care about that? And that's a good question, because the Coastal Commission is not committed to helping poor people or to dealing with economic justice or to stopping bigotry locally. But it is committed to coastal access for everyone. And if you are excluding a class of people from that access, i.e. those who are poor and live in RVs or have RVs, and requiring them to leave town at night in order to have access, not allowing them to park by the beautiful ocean in the evenings, which, why shouldn't you? Because a bunch of bigots don't like it that you're spoiling their view, because there's some isolated instances of dumping in the city, because there's some paranoid fantasies about meth labs or, you know, suspicious characters hanging around, because Steve Clark, our deputy police chief, likes to follow around perhaps people who he finds suspicious because they don't look right in the neighborhood, they don't fit in. No, this is all spurious stuff. But the only way that Coastal Commission, I think, can approach it within its mandate is if it finds that the city's law violates the city's own coastal defense or coastal environmental plan. I haven't got the name quite right. And I read part of my concern, which I expressed in an appeal a month or two ago, and actually I filed an original appeal way back, I think in November or December or thereabouts, when Rochelle Nasty Heart Narayan, maybe I'll call her. I don't know. She's one of the ongoing council members, unfortunately. She graduated from leading the bigots on the Public Works Commission to now presenting her bigotry at the city council level. So this law comes up for a final review. It's been passed by the city. There's no question about that. The question is, will it pass muster at the Coastal Commission level? And the answer is most probably yes, because the city staff has been huddling with the Coastal Commission staff, and it agreed to take an earlier law that it passed back in November or so, which banned all RVs from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. But this was not enough for the Take Back Santa Cruz crowd. And I don't want to. I did recognize some people from Take Back Santa Cruz, but I don't know that we should necessarily say the effort was led by Take Back Santa Cruz. But it's that mentality. We don't want those poor people messing up our neighborhoods. It's a crime problem. It's a health problem because they might be dumping stuff. They might be urinating and defecating. Of course, we'll keep the bathrooms locked and closed or non-existent at night. But that's okay because we have bathrooms in our homes, don't we? Or we can go have a cafe latte for $3.50 or $4 and use the bathroom there if they have the bathrooms open in those places, which I guess now more than in the past they do. For a long time, the coffee roasting company did not have an open bathroom. And all the bathrooms or visitors' bathrooms, I think with the exception of the Bookshop Coonerty, known more popularly as the Bookshop Santa Cruz, has removed their visitors' bathrooms. Visitors' bathrooms used to be funded by the city, so any Jane, Jerry, or Geraldine could go in and use the bathroom, even if they weren't a customer, you know, even if they were poor and ragged, you know, provided they didn't damage property on the way in or out. And that was good, but Pizza My Heart gave up on it, Cafe Gratitude gave up on it, and we have all the bathrooms locked in the parks And we have the one porta potty at Laurel and Front Street, the so-called Posner porta potty, probably his one of his sole claims to fame as he skulks away from the city council races because he's not running. You know, that's Micah Posner. Skulks might be a little strong. Although the image of a cowering council member really does kind of fit Micah Posner. I think he'd like to describe himself elsewise, but that's what I say to people who don't stand up explicitly and assist in the ending of the anti-homeless laws through word, through deed, through voice, through making accessible documents, through standing up to the city manager and the police department, none of which Posner has done with any kind of either consistency or frequency, in spite of repeated requests during the last 4 years that he do so. But we have to add that he is probably, and everyone will say this to me, but he's the most liberal of all the council members, which is equivalent to talking about someone who is a reformer in the camp of Attila the Hun or something. I mean, it's no big achievement unless you are dealing with specific requests that are made of you by your constituents. So, anyway, this Coastal Commission is meeting at 9 a.m. on next Wednesday, August 10th. It's a place for people with RVs to organize, to get together, because even if the Coastal Commission, as is likely, upholds the City Council's law and denies my appeal, RV livers still have to live somewhere. RV residents still have to be somewhere. And the more they get together to exchange information, to exchange stories, to exchange concerns, to act in solidarity, I really think the more chance there is of getting a sympathetic lawsuit, engaging a larger group in some kind of meaningful protest or pressure that allows for people to survive in Santa Cruz who've been here for decades but were forced out by the high rents or the foreclosure fraud or the lack of jobs, and they have to leave their home area and they go into a van or a car to live for a while, and now that's being denied. Now, I'm going to be giving out literature on this and posting something on Santa Cruz Indie Media. So I encourage people to check it out. If you have questions about this, like you want the exact address of the Hilton at which this is being held at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, next Wednesday, the 10th of August, and the kind of specifics that you need to speak up there. It really will be open to everyone, although I think there's two rounds, and the first round is only open to people. Well, you can see it, but you can't speak there unless you are a person who has publicly or in writing opposed this before the city council when it originally came up, which can be in a number of hearings. I mean, it came up in November. It came up in May. It may have even come up at the Public Works and Transportation Commission last year or the year before even. I think it was probably last year, 2015, when Narayan, as head of the Public Works Commission, did her dirt on the RV dwellers there. That's what it is. It's dirt. It's mean stuff. It's a complete denial of any kind of appreciation of the situation of people who live in their vehicles. She did no study. She didn't go out and ask a homeless lack of services center, as I call them, even that rather pathetic group, which is, you know, turned into a little armed kind of prison area for homeless folks, which has a prison-like quality to it, with the security guards and fences and ID and no impact zones and don't stay here during the day and so forth and so on. And then when you try to ask them questions, you can't get straight answers. We'll be talking about them later. So the fact that there was no input on from the RV community, from those who are aware of, you know, the number of people who do live in their vehicles or are about to, or are looking to because they have no other choice because it's illegal even to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night, something that the Freedom Sleepers, who will be doing their 57th sleep out this coming Tuesday at City Hall or on the sidewalk outside City Hall, will continue to fight that law. As I say, I'll hopefully be posting more on this on Santa Cruz Indie Media. But what I was talking about originally, and then strayed from, as I always do, is the Santa Cruz NAACP's this critique of the NAACP, and the story on Indie Bay continues. Simba Kenyatta, the current president of the Santa Cruz NAACP, wrote an op-ed piece for the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which I read and found pretty bad, on July 30th, praising local sheriffs for being different than the police who murdered unarmed black men in recent incidents in other states. Quote, "We wish to highlight the higher social sensitivity of the Santa Cruz County Sheriff and applaud his novel tactics." And I commented on this on the air, at least this praise by Kenyatta, I believe it was on Sunday, last Sunday. I said something to the effect that Sheriff Hart, who presides over the Santa Cruz Sheriffs and who is presiding over the Santa Cruz Jail, he does both, didn't seem to have too much to say when Krista DeLuca choked on her own vomit in a withdrawal, was denied methadone, was denied access to the hospital, to an emergent ambulance to get to the hospital, and apparently Hart's superiors, I'm sorry, his subordinates, recommended Gatorade and breathing exercises to help her out. And there have been about 5 deaths. I'm not sure how many of them under Hart's regime. A number of them have. Certainly Krista's death was. And a lot of that has to do with the private medical group that he has. If he hasn't hired it, and I don't know that he has, I mean, probably the Board of Supervisors is involved there, and they should be held accountable too. But it's his responsibility. The well-being of the people in that jail is his responsibility. And if it is not happening, if people are dying there, and I said, as I say, 5 have died since, at least 5 since 2012, you got to go to him to find an account, to look for accountability. And Simba Kenyatta, head of the NAACP, is praising him. I've had a lot of critical things to say about Simba, although there's a lot of good things to be said, too, I'm sure. But it's the same kind of criticism I would make of someone like Steve Plaich or Drew Clover, other people who are running for office. I don't know about Steve Schnarr, maybe Steve, too. I say these are the sort of the best of a bad bunch, perhaps with the exception of Nate Kennedy, who's more of a sort of a impromptu street activist, who's also running for city council. But we need to address issues and not use these kinds of positions on the NAACP or SCORE, Santa Cruz County Coalition Against Racism, I think it's called, or the American Lack of Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU in Santa Cruz. And that, unfortunately, is what I see activists who I otherwise like doing. I'm talking about Plaich here primarily, and I've been trying to hold him accountable for this for years, but he's a slippery, silver-tongued guy. Simba Kenyatta also made this statement, the story continues on Indie Bay, about the killing of unarmed black men by police. "This tragedy should not be allowed to continue because our future matters. All lives matter. Blue lives matter and black lives matter." This statement from Simba Kenyatta is a clear co-option of the Black Lives Matter message. It should be noted that the Santa Cruz NAACP was silent after 2 Santa Cruz sheriffs shot and murdered 17-year-old Cyrus Hurtado in Boulder Creek on July 9, 2015. Hurtado was suffering from a mental health episode when the Santa Cruz sheriffs murdered him. The Santa Cruz NAACP exerted no influence over the sheriff's department to help improve their policies in order to prevent a murder like Sarah's Hurtado's from happening again. And I actually was almost, I was excised from the Indy Bay for once because I criticized the NAACP after they had a large march, but I described them as essentially being ineffectual and co-opted, which is what they've been for years, in my view. I'd love to see evidence to the contrary, but I haven't. In the fiscal year 2012-2013, this story continues. The budget for the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Department was $31 million for operations and $68 million total, including the budget for corrections. In 2015, the Santa Cruz Police Department operated on a $25 million budget, or 29% of the city of Santa Cruz's entire general fund. And, of course, that doesn't include the millions being given to the Parks and Rec Rangers to expand their harassment of poor people and people of color who are getting citations. I speak from specific interviews downtown and in the Poganip and in the parks at night where people try to go to sleep to get some rest since all the shelters are full. What shelter there is. In fact, shelters aren't even taking people unless they correspond with this bogus criteria of a pathway to housing, which is what the shelters need in order to seize funding or get funding from the federal and state agencies. The illusion, again, which has been carried on for decades, that there is some plan to end homelessness, when in fact there is nothing of the kind. If there's a plan to end homelessness, you start building housing, and you start taking over vacant buildings, and you start taxing real estate speculation, and you start providing tenants with rights so they don't get kicked out, and you start holding the banks accountable for their fraud instead of prosecuting the people who raise these issues, as the Santa Cruz 11 did back in 2011, and the Occupy movement did. The mission statement of the NAACP is to ensure the political, educational, social, and economic equality of all persons and to eliminate racial and hatred discrimination, according to our author here, who I think is anonymous, by the way, but you have to judge of the merit of what she or he says. The vision statement of the NAACP is to ensure a society in which all individuals have equal rights and there is no racial hatred or racial discrimination. Does the Santa Cruz NAACP think it is more important for their organization to raise money for police than raising money for local schools, or raising money for the homeless, or those that are hungry? And this is the question that this author is asking. The police fundraiser in August is being sponsored by the Santa Cruz chapter of the NAACP to support Santa Cruz Police Department, Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Office, Showing Up for Racial Justice, a new group called Surge Santa Cruz, and Santa Cruz County Community Coalition to Overcome Racism, SCORE, the group I just talked about, a group that I've repeatedly said over 10 years ago collected dozens of accounts of racial profiling and then did absolutely nothing about them except use the hearings that they had publicly held around the county as a basis for getting grant money for interns and computers. And Simba Kenyatta was involved with that, too. Shame on you, Simba. And shame on those who are doing the same kind of thing with their other organizations, who are not raising the real issues that brave activists throughout this country are raising, and that some of us in the city are raising here and have been. Some Huff activists have been raising issues about police abuse for decades, and more specifically after the Black Lives Matter movement became more prominent with the Ferguson murders of Mike Brown and New York murder of Eric Garner, and then the litany of murders, hundreds and hundreds of deaths, with essentially zero convictions by police. And I would say infinitesimal numbers of firings, a few, but not much. And instead you get this blue backlash, you know, oh, blue lives matter, you know, that sort of thing. Blue lives are very well protected, very well funded, very well organized, and walking around murdering black lives and poor people in terms of their lack of accountability. And that is, in fact, what is being shown nightly on your TV screen, and I really hope people here begin to do more about it. This kind of discussion on Indy Bay is rare, particularly criticism of the NAACP and SCORE, and other local nonprofits that claim to be oh so interested in, oh, let's have a little police review board, you know, that takes a look at the police department, but stays chummy with them and it shows great concern for the safety of the officers and all this kind of stuff. It's the safety of the community, including, yes, including officers, anybody, but the people who are running around shooting people are the ones who need to be looked at, and they're the ones that need to be held in check. You don't fund them more. You hold them accountable. The story continues. A Facebook event post for the fundraiser is requesting the community donate money in advance of the fundraiser to PayPal to, quote, offset some of the setup costs. From the Facebook event, join us for a day of fun and games to raise money to build coalitions between the Santa Cruz community law enforcement agencies. Sounds sadly like Drew Glover here. I hope not. And organizations committed to racial justice. Tell me it isn't so, Drew. The event will feature bounce houses, dunk tank, exotic petting zoo, music by, isn't this a sweet thing? Escape room by Exit Santa Cruz, Pokemon lures, and free racial bias awareness training. Well, ain't that the thing? The Black Lives Matter movement talks about how much money flows to police departments. Black Lives Matter, which is distinguished from this particular event to raise money for police and the social service agencies, or I should say the private nonprofits that cozy up to them. The federal government should reallocate funding directly dedicated to policing and incarcerations and instead invest those funds in long-term safety strategies, such as educational, community restorative justice, and employment programs that have been shown to improve community safety. In the last few decades, the federal government has thrown billions of dollars at state and local governments to fund quickly expanding police forces and jails. Since September 11th, the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, alone has given between $30 billion and $40 billion in direct grants to state and local law enforcement. Whose law, is what I'm wondering. As well as, actually I'm not wondering, it seems pretty clear, as well as other first responders. The federal government doled out an additional $376 million to state and local law enforcement in 2013 through the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Grant Program. That was down from more than $1 billion in 1998, and of course there is an estimated $5 billion worth of surplus military equipment that has gone to local law enforcement, 20 college campuses and over 20 school districts through the Department of Defense, that's the War Department, folks. These funds are given with little or no oversight, and there is no accountability mechanism. Sounds a little like Bearcats for Santa Cruz and other nice toys that the police can then use. Moreover, there is no evidence that the massive spending on incarceration reduces crime rates or keeps communities safer. Studies do show that jobs and education make communities stronger and keep them safer. Investments in community-based drug and mental health treatment, education, universal pre-K, and other social institutions can make communities safer while improving life outcomes for all. Children who do not participate in the preschool programs are 70% more likely to be arrested for a violent crime by age 18. And youth who participate in summer job programs in Chicago saw a 43% decrease in arrests over a 16-month period. Studies that show that jobs and education do not just make communities stronger, they make them safer. And suggests you go to the Movement for Black Lives platform. And there's a meeting at Garfield Park on August 3rd by the NAACP Peace Party. It sounds like a splinter group from the NAACP, but I haven't looked it over. I just noticed this story when I was an hour before the show began. And I'm going to hope to have somebody on the air talking about this group and the situation. I have brought up in the past what I specifically put out myself and that Huff has put out for local police reform, concerns that we have expressed. And we've actually picketed the police station four times. And across the country, you've got Black Lives Matter protests all over the place. And repression by the police department all over the place. And, of course, the Sentinel and other media is usually ignoring it, and the local activists are not engaging in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter protests. As I mentioned on the air, I went to a Project Pollinate meeting on a sort of, I don't know, it was a community chattering about the issue. That's how I described it. New ways to organize different subcommittees that would discuss different parts of the problem, but with no reference to this, the Hurtado murder, which I frankly hadn't even heard about before reading this particular story. I think I probably did, actually, but didn't pay much attention to it. And people who actually do fight this are sort of, the activist community turns away from them, doesn't pay much attention to them. So, for example, the Santa Cruz 6 or the Monterey 8, I think I got their names wrong a little bit, who blocked the freeway, get no real solid support from the community other than maybe, I think there was some, there was a fundraiser or two, and I think I was actually at one of those where it's held at Joe Schultz's place. The Schultz is the fellow who provides food support at Trader Joe's. No, at he comes every Tuesday night bringing soup and coffee, and he has also held fundraisers for them. But generally, there's not that kind of support. And more important, the issues are not carried forward. So the issues for which people did block the freeways are just, they disappear into the mist. So, as I said a year ago, I put out a flyer, don't just watch a play, fight local police abuse. Like, you know, Joe at India Joe's does. Open the books on the use of tasers, batons, guns, pepper spray, chokeholds, and pain compliance. Well, he provides benefit and support. He's not out there blocking the roads. But there are some who want to and some who do. And if enough people started engaging in the kind of daily or even weekly protests around specific issues about the Santa Cruz police and the Santa Cruz sheriffs, there would at least the city council chair-warming candidates who are, about to be having a bunch of forums this fall, would be, I think, forced to address those issues, particularly if people came to those meetings, as Black Lives Matter has done in other areas, and demanded that those issues be addressed. How about the bloated police budget for the largest in the state for a city of 60,000 that I understand we have? How about demilitarizing and refocusing the Santa Cruz Police Department from its merchant security squad priorities downtown? See how quick the police show up when a merchant complains about someone sitting near a building, and compare that with the amount of time if there's some kind of theft you've had, how long that takes. With the real functions of the police department. I don't know about the current situation, but I've heard instances in the past that there's much more sensitivity to the merchant concerns as a merchant security service to sweep the streets of homeless people and poor people and performers that are outside the blue boxes than there is for dealing with real crime when it comes up. Demand our local police department refuse drug war money, military equipment, drone, face, and licensed surveillance technology. Require the cops to live in the city, if not the local districts they police. If you want community policing, then put the police in the community. Make them live there and be a part of that community, not just come in as an outside occupying force. End the abuse, citations, stayaways, and arrests, this of course is my big issue, of poor and homeless people for status crimes. You know, falling asleep at night when most people can do that without being arrested, but homeless people can't, depending on whether the police department decides to go after them at one time or another, or whether some bigot decides to complain about them, or some bigoted council member decides to remove the right of people to sleep in RVs, which the city council then passed 5-2 in May, and will be coming up, as I said, this Wednesday on August 10th. at the Scotts Valley Santa Cruz Hilton on La Madrona Drive, 9 a.m. I know, I hope I will continue to raise these issues, and I obviously will, at least, and I do on this show. And but to give you a break from my complaints, let me turn to a song or two for you so you can have a breather from this and maybe get a chance to call in at 427-3772. That's an option you have. And let's listen to some music while you're reaching for your phones. That one is downed out with a lot of irrelevant tones. Let's try the same singer with this one. I hope we have a little better orchestration.
All right. Has anyone ever heard of this guy, Phil Oakes? Yes. Just checking. This song is called Love Me, I'm a Liberal. It was written by Phil Oakes like a really long time ago. And so I updated it. Alright. I trade internet jokes about W. They sure are funny to me. But don't even think about asking.
And I'm afraid I've got to find some way to get rid of that twang. Just not sure how to do it right now. My apologies for this super twang, which seems to be invading my show. Let's turn instead now, again, while waiting your massive number of phone calls at 427-3772, if you'd like to call in, to some street interviews. It is the 27th of July. I think it's the 27th. And I'm talking with
Elliot.
And Elliot, you're here at the Huff meeting, such as it is. And you've got some thoughts. Well, you mentioned you got a camping ticket last night, but you also mentioned you were concerned about the, what I call the homeless lack of services center.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I witnessed a case of homicidal negligence. A woman who... She had said multiple times she thought she was about to have a heart attack, and she very well probably was, because she had heart disease and needed her damn medication, but they wouldn't give it to her for hours. They would sit in, they sit in this little booth thing answering random questions, but apparently that's more important than spending 30 seconds to grab this lady's heart medicine because of some, they said some weird, like, oh, some chain of command saying we need to get approval from so-and-so and stuff, but that's, if you're just following protocol, and your protocol means not giving an old woman her, who needs her medicine, like, not giving her her medicine, and possibly, like, then that's basically saying that they think the protocol is more important than her life.
Right. Now, do you remember the name of the person?
No.
And when did you see this happen?
It was about 4 or 5 days ago, thereabouts.
What time of day was it?
Let's see. It was about around 1, I think. It was sometime during the showering times, but she was waiting for hours, I'm pretty sure.
Now, where did all this happen exactly in the homeless lack of service center? Was it in the shower area?
No, it was there's some chairs outside of, I don't know, the medical area or something. It's right out front, like, by the sidewalk, and she was just waiting there, and they were not giving her medicine to her, and I think this is very, very indicative of how this, because that's the main homeless services center, and if the main homeless services center is homicidal negligence, that's like attempted murder, then that just shows that they want us out. Like they're promoting, you know, the police are so tight with Take Back Santa Cruz, and they're promoting this message of we need to clean the streets of the homeless. Our existence is offensive to them. That's how a lot of people feel, that our existence is offending to them.
Now, when she made these requests for the medication, who did she direct them to?
There's several people who just sit on their ass answering questions. And
someone behind a desk, someone in the booth, where was it?
People in the booth, they would be in the booth, and then they would walk outside and just stand, and then just go back in the booth and just sit.
And
I don't even know what any of them did, because I didn't see anyone doing anything.
Now, was this your first time there, or had you been there before?
I've been there a couple times before.
And was there any reaction from other people in the area to this situation?
Yeah, I mean, me and a friend of mine were cussing the staff out, and
What did the staff do after you cussed them out?
I don't remember that part very clearly. I'm pretty sure it was just some, like, they reacted pretty neutral. Like, I remember we were saying that, and they just had blank looks on their faces. And
now, other than you and your friend, were other people concerned about this?
I mean, not that I'm aware of. I hope they are, but I can't speak for them.
There were other people around, though?
Yeah.
Okay. Did any members of the staff, like the executive director, Phil Kramer, or anybody else walk by or happen into the neighborhood that you know of? You probably may not know Phil Kramer by sight. He's the executive director. And were these guys the security guards you talked to, or were they some other more clerical staff that she was trying to get their stuff from?
I don't know. She talked to a variety of staff members, but they all seemed to just be walking around or just sitting around or just doing nothing. So it's hard to discern what they do because they don't do much.
This was inside a building or outside?
Outside.
And she caught them as they walked by?
Yeah, and she went up to them a few times. But when she just getting up, I mean, I can't speak for her, but what I remember her saying, she got up and went to the staff, and just getting up and walking over to the booth made her feel like she was about to have a heart attack. And she thought she was going to die, because she could have died.
Now, when you say the booth, what are you referring to?
There's the waiting area, and right next to the waiting area, there's a booth out front. That's
the one that you go through in order to get in.
Yeah.
And those really are the security guards, right?
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. I haven't been there for a while.
They just walk. They're all just staff members who are just kind of there. Like, most of them, they like, help the homeless as little as possible. They just, like, I get on the shower area, I just see it's, like, someone just standing around in there. And, I don't know, they're just, it seems like they totally do the bare minimum, less than the bare minimum. Because if you're not... Because it's illegal to hold someone's meds away from them, but the thing is that just because that's illegal doesn't mean anything. Like,
now, you don't think these guys actually had her meds? You think maybe that someone in the office had her meds? And why, I mean, do we know that she was, in fact, accurate in believing they had her meds, and why would they have her meds?
Well, they had, like, her old heart medicine, but not... It wasn't her current prescription.
So she said they brought her some meds, but it wasn't the proper meds.
No, like that was, because she didn't have the proper meds. I mean, I don't know if it's proper meds, just that the whatever she had that was newer. Apparently, that wasn't, for whatever reason, wasn't in anyone's possession or something. But
so this is what she had, this is what she told you. Yeah.
She had, but she said that she had. Her old medicine somewhere, and that just go over there and get it. But, you know, like, they should have gone, even if she didn't have medicine there, then they should at least go over there. Cause,
now, there was where?
I forget where.
Maybe she was staying in the Pauly loft or something? Or
I don't know. I don't know. It's not.
So, also, you yourself, what, you received a camping ticket today? Or?
Yes.
And what was the circumstance behind that?
I just woke up and there was a piggy just
in blue or in green?
Blue, although I don't know, the Rangers have virtually the same amount of power as police, so I mean they're just different shirts now. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and what time of day was this?
Around 6:30-ish.
And if you wish to say, where did it happen?
It's a parking lot, a small parking lot that's kind of out of the way.
And were you with anybody else, or with...
I was with a friend of mine.
Did you both get ticketed?
Yep.
And what did the police officer say to you?
Oh, just a few condescending shit, and, like, try to make small talk with me. And other than that...
Did you get anything like a stay-away order?
No, I just got a sleeping ticket.
And is this your first such citation in town?
Well, first written one.
And interrupting briefly, it may be that the reason that Elliot here didn't get a stay-away order, which apparently is becoming standard practice from Rangers, although if this was a cop, that might be one reason. Rangers have the power, and I suppose, I think it may extend to law enforcement officers generally, when... It's particularly with reference to rangers on ranger-controlled or designated area, which not only includes all the parks and all the Poganip area, but also up and down Pacific Avenue, areas you wouldn't think were considered parks. They don't really call them parks, but they're designated as within the ranger zone, so to speak. But if he was in a parking lot, that wouldn't be, I don't think, a ranger-designated zone. And therefore, it may be that the practice they have of giving a stay-away order along with an infraction ticket, which is an extra legal procedure, and I would even call it an illegal procedure, because you are depriving someone of their liberty without protection of the law, without due process of law, without taking them to a judge, without having them being tried and found guilty of a specific crime, without having the elements of the crime shown to have happened. And I mean, you have a bunch of phony crimes anyway, which have to do with sitting down, sleeping at night, smoking in an area where no one is being bothered. Nonetheless, in order to convict people of those crimes, you have to show that they actually happened. And you have to show that before a so-called impartial judge. So the business of giving people stay away orders, which I think David Chiraz has cooked up, and perhaps, you know, it's, I'm speculating here. He's a council member, but it was presented by the former head of the Parks and Rec Department, Danette Shoemaker, that there'll be this whole system of stay-away orders for increasing lengths of time given by the police officer, not by a judge, even before a charge has been made. In other words, if a cop writes you a ticket, that doesn't mean a charge has been made. It just means the officer has written a citation. The city attorney decides whether to forward that citation to the court and to prosecute it. He doesn't really prosecute it. It just happens by the cop comes in and gives his testimony, and rarely does the city attorney appear. Still, it's not a charge, much less a trial, much less a conviction, much less a stay-away order, which is not usually granted in minor infractions by the judge. And, I mean, in the past, when I've been to dozens of sleeping van trials, almost never did the judge give, or even the commissioner, or even the referee, meat grinder mulligan, as we call the referee, or basket case basket, the commissioner of Department 10, don't give stay-away orders. And the idea that the police officers can do this as a matter of course, or that the rangers can, is really an outrageous expansion of police power. And it shows how little regard homeless folks are held in this community, and how little regard the community has, provided it's not happening to them. So when they take away the Jehovah's Witnesses, when they take away the gays, when they take away the mentally disabled, as long as it's not happening in my family, but of course when they started taking away, when they threatened to take away some half-Jewish veterans who were married to Nazis, that became a matter of great concern, even in the middle of the war. And women were able to stop it. An interesting film on that subject came out about a decade ago. I don't remember the name of it, but it was quite impressive. So it really depends on whose ox is being gored, on whose privileges are being threatened, or whose rights are being stripped away. And all of this, of course, gets back to the fact that in a parking lot, there is no provision for giving a stay-away order. There is a provision for giving a bogus citation. That's thanks to Supervisor Ryan Coonerty, previously council member Ryan Coonerty, who helped create the parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to be in a parking lot, even if you're sitting in your car reading a book, even if you paid to be there, and you can only go to your car if you're parking or retrieving it or walking through. Of course, that's only enforced against people the police find suspicious, of course. And so you have the whole due process of law removed, both through these stay-away orders and through the selective enforcement that has been essentially created by the Santa Cruz City Council. And that so far we hear no council candidates specifically demanding the abolition of. I think Plaich at the time, Steve Plaich, did oppose this. And I think he has even written peripherally about how bad it is in a series of articles he's done for the Street Spirit newspaper. But as a city council candidate, homelessness has become, I think, a low priority for him. I've got to look at his website again. Maybe I should do that now. Let's see here. Well, why don't I take that musical break? I think I was able to get rid of the whistles and growls and strange tones that were happening. Let's see what we can do with this.
In a time where irony is just about dead.
But apathy's out there breathing like rabbits. Here's a new one, Phil.
I cried when they selected George W., but this would change in time. mine. But killing Afghanis is good for us. It's where 9/11 was planned. Yeah, right. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a Democrat. I went to anti-war protests. I can't stand Iraqis be killed, 'cause they had nothing to do with it. Doesn't that oil belong to them? But tapping our phones and torturing is to keep us safe, I agree. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a Democrat. I can't stand the Republican Party. I can't stand their intolerant ways. Fox News with their propaganda. They're raising up good corporate slaves. When the Gulf was hit by Katrina, poor people should know where they stand.
Watch it.
So love me, love me, love me. I'm a Democrat. I cheered when Obama was chosen. Faith in the system restored.
Jesse International picking off on Phil Oakes' old song, Love Me, I'm a Liberal. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and this is your station if you choose to make it your station. You can call in at 427-3772. We have operational phones. If you have some songs you want to sing yourself, we could try that. And if you have some comments you want to make yourself, I'll certainly listen to them and give you my response. I have about an hour to go before Uncle Dennis's show. I'm not sure if he's in town. He may well be. He's, of course, got his show From the Cream to the Dregs, which, as well as the Earth First Update, which comes after this show at 8 o'clock. Continuing with the report from Elliot at the Huff meeting before the last one. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. If you're interested in these civil rights issues around homeless and poor people, we meet every Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific, at 11 o'clock in the morning. I think we'll even might be a little later this next Wednesday because there is this conflicting Coastal Commission meeting where they'll be considering the appeal of the anti-homeless RV ban that is coming up at 9 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday the 10th. But usually it's at 11 for the Huff meeting, and you're invited. You're all invited out there.
Like, I got, like...
A warning.
But
how long you been in town?
Well, I've lived here my whole life, but I recently become homeless.
Due to a rent situation or something else?
Something else.
And any other thoughts or comments you want to make about stuff you've seen in the last week?
Well, I've heard a lot of rumors, because, you know, the city, like, the rhetoric of people on city council and stuff is that of ethnic cleansing. You know, they want to cleanse us from the streets. And I've heard lots of accounts of groups such as Take Back Santa Cruz and like Confederate and Nazi groups doing all sorts of horrible things. Like I've even heard rape and murder allegations. And so I really think, like, the first step, In my opinion, I don't know, a lot of people need to come together to think of solutions, but just what seems right to me is first work on exposing and getting, like, tangible proof and stuff. Probably like doxing and, like, leaking stuff. That's usually the best way. Because then when we get that, we can be like, because if we just make allegations, no one's going to, oh, it's just a crazy homeless person. But if we get proof, we back up what we say, then we could start rallying people behind. Like,
do you have a cell phone yourself?
It's dead most of the time.
And when it's operational, does it take audio and video?
It is capable, yes.
Because that, if you ever get it going, is one thing you can do is video encounters you have or audio them.
Indeed. And I advise anyone listening to this to do the same, because we really need to organize ourselves to defend ourselves. We can't just wave signs around. It's about survival. Like, if you want to live, we got to do something about this, because they're doing something about it. They're pushing forward. They're, you know, they're cutting off, like, giving people tickets for selling art. A lot of houseless people get by selling art. So they're trying to cut off our means to get what we need to survive, and they're, you know, like, look up Tent City. There was this place in L.A. where all the houseless people would camp. One day, all their stuff, all their tents, everything was still there, but the people weren't. They all disappeared. So, I don't want a Tent City to happen in Santa Cruz. So, I'll just end this by saying we all need to get the fuck together and defend ourselves.
You're here. Hey, Steve.
How long you been outside?
Like,
grab a coffee if you want.
Month, 2 months, thereabouts.
Well, and again, we've been talking with
Elliot.
Thanks, Elliot.
You're welcome.
Tent cities are okay with me, although I'm glad I don't live in one, but they're better than living alone in an isolated way, I think, generally, if they're voluntarily brought together rather than a coerced kind of response like a concentration camp environment. I've been hearing complaints about the church programs. There's one very small church program that replaced the Interfaith Satellite Shelter program, which was somewhat larger and somewhat looser. It's a program that's run by the Association of Faith Communities, which actually is having the first candidate forum of this season. I think that's coming up in about a week for all of you political addicts who want to check out the local candidate stuff. Distracted here by something that came up on the screen. Tent cities, I guess what Elliot was talking about was the destruction of tent cities. It's much easier to destroy individual tents, slash them, which is what I've gotten numerous reports of happening in the last year to people who are camping, and reports of property being hauled away. And again, documenting this, I think, is key. And posting these accounts online, whether it's YouTube or elsewhere, I think it's really important. There was a story in today's Sentinel I noticed. Lawsuit questions freedom of speech. It's a front page story above the fold. A federal lawsuit filed Wednesday on behalf of a street preacher who was probably mouthing a lot of homophobic horseshit, but nonetheless, his right to speak. His name is Donald Allen Harmon of Pleasanton. I hope I'm not betraying my anti-deistic instincts here, my anti-Christian instincts. I really don't have too much positive to say about organized Christianity, even disorganized Christianity being done by individuals who are ranting messages of hatred. It's not particularly to my taste, but I think people have got a right to rant on Pacific Avenue, and it certainly beats silence, I think, generally. And I find it an interesting story, although it's limited. This guy's got an attorney who filed suit against the police department for denying him a permit for a loudspeaker, which he was using for a while. But then the police department got complaints, so they decided that that was sufficient to deny him access to his free speech, which, of course, is what's called the heckler's veto. If you allow hecklers to veto people's free speech, then there isn't any free speech. And the way the history is described, he began preaching his Christian beliefs on Pacific Avenue spring of 2013 with a headset microphone and an amplifier on his chest, sometimes heckled or questioned by passersby. No trouble with the police until March 2014, the next year. An officer told him he needed a permit to speak with an amplifier in public. Again, it's clearly discretionary. They let him go on and do it for long periods of time, and then until they finally told him, we've decided you shouldn't do that because some merchants, perhaps, or, you know, some people who don't like your message are going to try to shut you down. I'm surprised I didn't see this guy. I heard about a case, and I think this was probably the same case, where there was a loss, there was a criminal prosecution, and the law was thrown out. Part of the law was thrown out, not much of the law, unfortunately. I've been ticketed under this law, and I faced the longest. The law is specifically a law against so-called unreasonable noise. Unreasonably disturbing noise is actually the wording of the ordinance. In any case, continuing with this Harmon's experiences, this Pastor Harmon, who is being defended by a lawyer, Kellum, from the Center for Religious Expression, in May of 2015, the officer told Harmon that he'd received complaints because the amplifier volume was too loud, so he lowered the volume, continued to preach several times until July 2015, and the police said they'd received more complaints, so they were just going to revoke his permit. And then they wrote him tickets, because he apparently continued to assert his right, for unreasonable noise after more complaints from two businesses on Pacific Avenue. One restaurant owner said that patrons could not hear themselves converse because of Harmon's loud preaching outside the front door. And I would find myself wondering if it wasn't his loud preaching which reached the parts of the sidewalk taken over by the cafes which have been colonized by the restaurants. I don't know. He returned to Pacific Avenue in September 2015 and was written a third noise ticket. And he said the ticket was unfair given that musicians on the street consistently perform at louder volumes. Now, I was not a witness to Mr. Harmon's experiences, and I haven't seen or heard of him, so he must be a relatively infrequent speaker. I myself have been cited numerous times, and it has very little to do with your volume. It has to do with your content and the police department's attitude towards you in terms of their past experiences. At least that is the conclusion I reached, and I talked about this at length 6 years ago when we were taken to trial, myself and three others, for singing in front of the Bookshop Coonerty, Bookshop Santa Cruz it's called, songs about homelessness. The point being to raise the issue of Ryan Coonerty, who was then on the city council's discriminatory legislation against the poor, having to do with, as I mentioned before, the parking lot panic law, the sleeping ban, various other ordinances that he's been supporting. In a very narrow, commercially minded way, his original ordinance for removing people from parking lots had to do with the fact that his employees reported they felt anxious when they saw people hanging around the parking lots. Actually, initially it was the parking garages, and that expanded to one parking lot, and then that expanded to all parking lots in town. And there was no documentation of significant crime of any greater nature than those on the sidewalk or elsewhere. And we're talking not about private parking lots where a private individual can do what she wants, but public parking lots paid for by the city, by the taxpayers, where it will now be illegal to sit. It is illegal to stand and talk with your friends, sit with a book, reading in the car, change your diapers on a baby. And, of course, oh, no, they'd never go after you for that. Depends on how poor you are. Depends on how much they don't like you. You have given the police the tools to do that. So I'm curious how Mr. Harmon's case ends up. I'm actually mentioned in this article by writer Stephen Baxter, although I think he leaves a misimpression. And actually he talks about another street preacher sued the city in federal court in 2011, so it was somebody else. Separately, the city contended with free speech issues after activist Robert Norris was ordered out of city council meetings in 2004 for disruptive behavior that included a Nazi salute. And actually, it was simply the Nazi salute. There was nothing disruptive other than the council's own attempt to enforce its own standard of what is allowed in terms of peaceful protest and what is not, what is allowed in terms of peaceful dissent and what is not. And it's, you know, similar to the kind of stuff we saw at the Republican and Democratic conventions, only in our own city. But the misimpression that's being given by this article is the case, the final sentence. The case was appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, that's my case, but later handed back to an appellate court that sided with the city in 2015. It should be clarified that I was never charged with anything in court. The city has done this frequently. They'll have you arrested, and then you'll have to go to court, and you get to court and you find there are no charges. That's happened to me many times. And what happened was we then, some attorneys stepped forward and said, let's sue this, the mayor, the council, the police officer who arrested you, because you were denied your right to go to that council meeting. You were taken away in handcuffs from that council meeting. You were held in jail. And your crime was when the mayor cut short oral communications and essentially threatened, excluded one person and threatened another with arrest. You gave a mock Nazi salute from the side, silent and brief. That's what I was charged with. And then you were arrested. We then sued them for violating my First Amendment rights. And the case went all the way up to, didn't quite make it to the Supreme Court. It went to the Supreme Court didn't want to hear it. But the city spent $200,000 appealing this when all we asked for was that they change the rules of city council to reflect the fact that unless you are actually disruptive in a council meeting, that a violation of the rules, speaking, you know, criticizing a council member, expressing belief that the council is acting fascistically, which they frequently are, in my view, particularly towards the poor, cannot be construed as a crime or a disruption unless you actually stop the meeting. And I'm not saying there aren't times, perhaps frequently, that meetings should be stopped. But the fact of the matter is that if you're operating within the law, you should not be denied your right to do that, obviously. I mean, the laws themselves are very absurd in many ways and very discriminatory, but assuming you're working within the law. So the case went up to the federal courts twice, and they ruled that rules by the city council and violating those rules, violating a rule by a city council does not constitute a disruption, which is what the city council has claimed frequently. You'll do what I say, or you'll have to leave. And the answer is, no, I don't have to leave. Please proceed with the meeting. You don't like the fact that I'm standing in the back with a big sign that says, you're a bunch of fascists, or I'm holding up my arm in a Nazi salute, or I have my back to you when I'm speaking at the microphone because I want to show you my contempt for what you're doing. These are all forms of speech that have to do with a way of expressing something that the council does not allow to be expressed in a reasonable way because they don't pay any attention to reason. What they do pay attention to is a more direct, stronger, emotional kind of message. Or a more stark message. And, of course, the attention they pay is they try to suppress it. But the courts have ruled that unless you are stopping a meeting, if the council stops the meeting to tell you, you can't do this and you can't do that, like I've been told, like I put a recording device up by the podium, and the mayor 3 years ago made a ruling that I couldn't do that without giving any reason. And the council passed that, including Don Lane and Micah Posner, all voted for that. Well, I ignored it. I continued to record. I was arrested for it at one point, and they were charging me with anything because you're not going to get a jury to convict a reporter, which is what I am, audioing a public meeting, which you have a right to do under state law. And so I've continued to do it, but I have to worry every time that the police officer is going to come, arrest me, stop me from doing this, in this little dance the city council can do because it has the legal power, the police power. And I suppose in some respects it may have some community support now that there is an active right-wing peanut gallery that's often sitting in the audience and also has its representatives like Pamela Comstock, Cynthia Matthews, David Tarasis on the city council, and sounds like Cynthia Chase too these days. So this story is not entirely accurate about the pastor. I'm glad he is sued, not because I know nothing about his message, what it is. I may or may not agree with it. I probably don't. As I said before, I don't have too much patience with Easter bunnies, Christian mythology, hate speech masquerading as worship, all this kind of stuff. But I do have sympathies with individuals who want to speak out. And because I know how others are being taken away for it falsely and abusively on Pacific Avenue. And that's the kind of police abuse I'd like to see the Homeless Lives Matter movement working on, in concert with Black Lives Matter. And who knows, maybe that will happen. Let's hear some more from the street. Returning to Elliot, who, actually I think we finished with Elliot. After that Huff meeting, a couple of activists and I went downtown and began to do some tabling in solidarity with activists Joff and Alex, the two artists who have been arrested 5 times in the last year for simply displaying their artwork outside the small blue boxes that the city council has decided under advice from staff members Julie Hendy and Scott Collins are the best way to preserve a clean, uncluttered, and trip and fall free, trip and fall hazard free area which is ridiculous, of course. It's an attempt to thin out the street culture down there and to pander to those who wanted to turn it into simply a commercial area. In any case, we ran into at least this guy who had some comments about, well, you'll hear.
It is the 27th of July, I think it's the 27th, and I'm talking with
Elliot.
And Elliot, you're here at the...
Sorry, let's try to avoid screwing up. Here's a non-Elliot bit of audio.
Sure, it's about 20 to 2, I'm down here. Sure. It's about 20 to 2. I'm down here on the mall with
Dr. Michael Finkelstein, Ph.D.
And Michael, you've just arrived from Florida?
About 2 weeks ago.
And you were homeless in Florida?
I was homeless. I've been homeless in Canada, in two different states, and it's absolutely horrible. I pray for all the homeless people.
And how long were you homeless?
Off and on for about within 10 and 20 years in different places. And I slept in the golf course on Miami Beach on the 16th hole for 8 months, and my father sat there and watched me. God bless him.
He stayed up while you went to sleep?
He stayed in his $500,000 house in Pinecrest, where Bob Marley's mother lives, and I've been, Sadella Booker. I'm sure you've heard of her. It's his mother. And I just thank God I'm not homeless, and I pray for the homeless people.
So you have a place here in Santa Cruz?
I'm looking at above... Collections. It's a place called the Royale. It's the best deal in town. 700, first laugh, no deposit, no problems. I'd like to move in there tomorrow. I'm supposed to meet with the owner.
And where is this place?
It's right above the yellow awning where it says Collections. You must have seen it.
On Pacific, you mean?
Yeah, it's a yellow. You tell them. You can describe it.
I know. It's not up
Crossroads.
Near, it's up near Zachary's.
Crossroads, excuse me. Crossroads. There's a yellow awning that says Crossroads.
Near Zachary's, I think.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, you're always playing at the Catalyst this week.
You got me, man. And again, we've been talking
Friday
with...
night at the beach. Free concerts.
That's a good point.
Dr. Where? The Wharf? Dr. Michael Finkelstein.
Thank you, Michael.
Right. Every Friday.
Hold it. We're talking with...
The other day, I saw...
What's your name,
and
sir?
It didn't bother me.
Your name is?
Sil Posner.
I see you have your book with you, The Rabbi and His Famous Friends. Is this a new book?
Same old book.
Wow, I've forgotten. I think I purchased it from you years ago.
Did you ever read it?
Probably not.
Yeah, well, you probably...
I think it got lost in the shuffle, actually.
You'd be a more ethical person if you read my book.
Well, I see you have a dog on the back of your bike, a book in the front of your bike.
I'm a triple peddler. I peddle my dog, I peddle my bike, and I peddle my book.
You peddle your propaganda. I know about you. You say that you've been asked by one of our new rangers about your business activities without a license.
Right, and I called his bluff, and since then he's left me alone.
And what was the nature of your conversation with him?
He said that I couldn't sell my book. I couldn't sell downtown unless I was in one of the areas. And I said, that's not true. I said, I've spoken to the city attorney, and as long as I'm moving and it's my book, there's no problem. Oh, here now we have a big problem because here comes Steve.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I know about him.
So
this is the former Freedom Sleeper gathering here. I can see it happening.
So, you've been out walking on my precincts?
Yeah.
I was going to tell you. Look how he challenges me. Saturday we went out.
Good.
And we're planning to do it every Saturday.
We'll leave this. Steve, you have a ticket in your hand. Did you get a citation?
No. I found this over at City Hall on the ground. Evidently somebody received...
This is activist Steve Plaich, also a city council candidate, also... regular supporter of the Freedom Sleepers. He posts every week on Facebook photos of the Freedom Sleepers' recent activities. And you can go online. You can find out about Freedom Sleep 56. Number 57 is coming up next Tuesday. He, Phil Posner, and I were part of the original Freedom Sleepers. None of us are sleeping there now. But there are still people who are every Tuesday night. It's over in Salinas where they sleep every night at City Hall, and hopefully we can actually get a report from them on Sunday. Maybe I'll try and raise them on the phone, see what I can do. So let's hear a little more of this meeting of the greats on the sidewalk.
The stairway yesterday, so you might want to see if that's one of your
your constituents.
13.04.010, that's the same ticket that you and I got, Phil. And you got too, Steve.
Yeah?
Being in a park after dark. In this case, City Hall after dark.
So here we are downtown.
And that's one of the shames of the Freedom Sleepers, that we never really effectively organized to fight the citations that the police were illegitimately giving us for being on the grass at City Hall. We allowed them to move us onto the sidewalk. We allowed them to remove all the grass and set up this sterile sort of concrete decorative plants and cement all over the place, replacing the grass. Plaich and I bear some significant responsibility for not really dealing with that, showing that we had a limited amount of energy we were willing to put into it. We did warn people, or at least I did, that there wasn't necessarily going to be legal support. I never felt there was going to be legal support, but there were some who felt there were and hoped there would be for the Freedom Sleepers. And there was some limited legal support, but almost invariably people were found guilty and fined, although that was generally converted into pay a smaller amount of money to the so-called community options group and then go to do 20 hours or so with community service, which is can be burdensome to particularly poor people. One of the criticisms of the Freedom Sleepers and protest movements generally in Santa Cruz that I've been with are that we somehow lure people into situations where they get tickets and citations and so forth. In fact, of course, it ended up being that the people at the protest got less citations than elsewhere in the city, where you will get a ticket for sleeping at night, whereas almost without exception, people sleeping on the sidewalk outside at the Tuesday night Freedom Sleepouts have not gotten any sleeping ban tickets. For one reason or another, the city does not think that's a good idea. Although the ticket that Steve had to do with somebody who slept under the, the awning. It was in the passageways of City Hall. If you're familiar, when you walk into the City Hall buildings, there's a series of corridors, some of which are enclosed, but open to the public, except that the City Hall has been closed at night by the edict of the Parks and Rec Department. And that continues to be the case. And the citations people get are generally for that, being in a closed area after closing, as though that were some sort of crime. And people then get fined for it, have to go to court and fight it, and generally lose, because there's no respect for the constitutional rights of people to be at the center of government in a peaceful protest on a 24-hour basis. Santa Cruz has ruled you can't do that on the City Hall grounds. Although for years it was the case you could, without any justification or explanation, they changed that. And worse, we can understand they're changing it because power tends to kind of increase itself. It grows like a cancer often, unless it's stopped, lopped off, cut down to size, shrunk back to a reasonable size. But the real shame is that those of us who needed to do something about it didn't. Or perhaps you might say some of us tried but failed and have not been, well, I guess one can only devote a certain amount of one's time, or at least that's the excuse I use. So anyway, Plaich came up, Steve Plaich, to myself and Phil Posner, who's a rabbi. Both of these people were leaders in the movement to start the Freedom Sleepouts July before last in 2015. And now we're a joking gang on the street. And there's been no real follow-up since there was this sort of initial, let's wait for Don Lane, the council member, to come up with a sleeping ban proposal. We waited and waited and waited, and he finally did. It was defeated, and then everybody went home. Sad. Not everybody. Freedom Sleepers continue, and you can check it out Tuesday nights. And I think the Black Lives Matter movement is really inspirational. And I'm hoping folks will draw something from it for a Homeless Lives Matter, even though some people think that saying Homeless Lives Matter is a slur on Black Lives Matter. It is not, in my view. And I remind you, you're listening to Free Radio. 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. And you can call in at
427-3772. So, he got a big 24 stay away order.
Probably from the ranger.
I got a stay away order, too, when I got my ticket. But so, anything else?
Are you going to vote for Steve?
I don't know if I'm going to vote here at all. I'll take a look. I've seen this picture.
I mean, the guy's kind of a schmuck, but
we stand with working men and women and rabbis.
Oh, what's M.H. Cannon doing these days?
Well, you know what? I was out this morning at the informational picket at the Dominican Hospital.
You and Ken Deeg?
At the SEIU Solidarity picket out of Dominican. Very well attended.
Is this related, M.H. Cannon?
Yeah. That's what we call pivoting.
Was there a word?
I understand.
Pivoting.
I understand.
Was that
so this is
very...
Steve is the executive director of M.H. Cannon.
No, let's not start with this.
Just anyway, an update, a brief update, Steve.
You have to talk to Sarah. She's a spokesperson. I'm not speaking for her.
You're the chair of the board, man.
You're not speaking for the board anymore. Talk to Sarah.
He likes to shut us down, but he is the chair of the board. He's choosing not to speak.
And so,
you're interrupting an interview here with Phil Posner.
No, he's not.
And what you hear in a jovial way is my attempting to get a report from Steve Plaich on the latest M.H. Cannon doings, and he's evading it and avoiding it. Instead of speaking out against harassment, against M.H. Cannon, against the limitations on M.H. Cannon, he is keeping his mouth firmly shut, and he's the chair of the board. I can find no justification for this. He's a politician, and I don't have much patience with politicians. So let's see if we can get beyond that particular situation and turn to some other interviews.
So I'm talking with reluctant travelers. We have a pigeon hungry doggy. What's your name?
Peach.
And Peach, you're a little reluctant to say stuff, but if you were going to say anything, what would you say?
Wait, about what?
You know, about how Santa Cruz has been treating you.
Oh my God, Santa Cruz is magical. It's like definitely a trip. It's crazy here. All the people are awesome, and this is my favorite place in the world.
Where from?
Originally.
And recently?
Originally, I'm from New Jersey, as is she. And then I moved to California last year to Tahoe, traveled around a bunch, and now I live here in Santa Cruz. And
you have a backpack on your back. Does that mean you're outside?
Right now, I actually just moved in from my tent to a friend's family's house, and he let me stay in his house in exchange for work.
Cool. Any experiences outside that you want to share?
Like, while on my travels?
Yeah, well, I'm thinking in Santa Cruz, like, how are the police treating you?
I mean, the police have treated me pretty decently. I've had a couple of experiences, like, just seeing them and stuff, and they've been pretty friendly to me. Actually, in Palo Alto, I said hi to a cop, and they gave me this, like, thing so I can go get a card to get free food, free clothes, free bus passes, train passes.
But not in Santa Cruz.
That was Palo Alto, but pretty close. But, yeah, I don't know. The Santa Cruz cops have been pretty chill with me. I haven't really done anything for them to not be chill with me anyway, so.
Okay. Yeah. And we've been talking with?
What?
Your name again is?
Peach.
And you, sir, what are your thoughts?
I'm Michael. Here in Santa Cruz, I guess I've gotten pretty good. Actually, I would say excellent feedback and stuff from cops here. Originally, I'm from Oklahoma, so it's going to be a lot of different. You know what I mean? It's completely.
How long have you been in town?
I've probably been here 2 weeks. But usually, you know, I've gotten. Actually, they help you a lot more here, I would say. I would say that I've had a cop buy me some food before.
And have you been outside sleeping every night?
Yes, I have.
Have you encountered police in any way?
either helping or hurting?
When I was sleeping, where was it? It was by the boardwalk. I was sleeping by the boardwalk, and I had gotten woken up. And they just told me that I can move on, and there's no ticket. It was just not to sleep there.
These were Santa Cruz cops or security police?
No, they were Santa Cruz cops. Like the actual city police.
This is the only time that you had any interaction with them around sleeping?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, no, it sounds excellent.
And you are, of course, your name is?
Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. All right. Wow. What station?
I will give you a... And we have another man here who is snuggling. What's your name, sir?
Elliot. So, yesterday...
Nothing wrong with snuggling. Go ahead.
Yesterday, I was smoking a cigarette on Pacific, and I saw some pigs. So I walked down the alley, and they were... So I decided, like, I'd hide behind a little van for a while, so they'd, like, maybe walk past it. And after like 30 seconds, I got up. But that was just taking them that amount of time to get out of the car. And so I was walking down the alley, but there's two, maybe three more cops at the end of the alley, as well as a social worker. The social worker was like, we want to talk to you and whatnot. And I was like, I don't want to talk to you. So and I told the pigs and the pig social worker that unless you have a warrant for my arrest, fuck off. And so they after that I just walked quickly away, and a pig came up to me and tackled me and forced me onto the ground. Not like in a way that put me on my back, just like a way that forced me to sit down, but he put all his body weight on me and shit.
How many cops were involved here?
There's like four or five. Like after I looked up, and there's like four or five cops like 2 feet in front of me, not giving me any fucking space.
And where was this exactly? Do you remember?
Yeah. This was at the little, like, old-looking alleyway thing by the Poet and Patriot Pub.
And between any witnesses to this?
Between in that and Venetia's, no. I was alone.
And about what time was it?
It was somewhere, like, a bit early afternoon.
So they held you down, and then what happened? Or made you sit down?
So, the social worker said that they could actually hold me because they had to do a 5150 test because my parents had filed a missing persons report because I'd run away from home.
And how old are you?
I'm 18 years old.
Well, you have a right to go leave home if you're 18.
Exactly. And they said, oh, and I said, I'm not a danger to myself or others. But she said, oh, danger to self or others and critically disabled. You ran away from the police showing poor judgment. So basically, if I don't trust the pigs, I am clinically, the phrasing was gravely disabled.
Clearly paranoid.
Yeah, clearly out, like, who wouldn't trust an officer of the law, right? Like, they're the most trustworthy. They're always just, they're just, says on the car, protect and serve. Of course they just protect and serve. That's all.
Serve you for dinner.
What?
Serve you for dinner.
Funab Bomb served me for dinner.
No, Funab Bomb served you dinner. The police will serve you for dinner. As you will be on the main menu.
But I'm not a donut.
So what was the ultimate outcome of all this?
Well, I was kind of mad. Well, not kind of mad, really mad. I still am. Yeah, but I don't know. They can't, I guess, like, they have no excuse to do it again, but that doesn't mean they won't do it again. I don't know. I'm leaving this town in a few, so...
How long have you been here now?
All my life.
And in this particular incident, how long were you detained?
Oh, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things where, like, each second seems like a while, so hard to say. But it couldn't have been longer than... It could not have been longer than 5-10 minutes.
And when they finally let you go, what did they say? Or what did they say during that time?
Oh,
I mean, I just, like, I just finished the 5150 interview, and that's all I remember.
All right. But they didn't 5150. They just talked about it.
They did not 5150. They did not have a 5150 for me, so they couldn't detain me.
And we have been talking to that loony guy.
Loony guy, Elliot.
Thank you, Elliot.
Santa Cruz to get my batteries charged.
So we have a traveler here. What's your name, traveler?
Devaya.
And Devaya, where are you traveling from?
New Jersey and
of
Philadelphia.
Course,
running away from the dark coast.
You from Jersey?
I'm from Jersey. Yeah.
Jersey Goyles.
Point Pleasant Beach, straight across from Santa Cruz.
I'm gonna fight you about it. Let me fight you.
I'll fight you.
I think Jersey girls are.
Yeah.
Looks like comrades rather than opponents.
We don't pump our own gas.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz, Jersey girl?
This time, 3 days so far.
Any impressions?
I feel at home here. And I come here to refill my battery, and then I go back and shine light on the East Coast. So I come here to get it's like a vortex here of beauty and magic. That's what I feel here.
Well, don't stay too long. Your batteries may be stolen or depleted.
I'm trying to get to Mount. Well, yeah, my phone was stolen last night, but I don't let things like that get to me. So I'm trying to get to Mount Shasta, because I feel like there's a part of me that belongs there. I've never been, so.
Pretty mountain.
After that, I'm going to head back to New Jersey. Oh, not actually Philadelphia, because I'm in school. I'm a school kid, 37 years old, traveling.
But here you look,
semesters.
Not a day over 19.
That's what I feel like.
And what are you studying? What are you studying, or what is your main interest?
What do you think? Just let me give it, like. I'm good with people. I love everybody, so I want to counsel. Human services.
Human services.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how you can study that.
It's like, you know, you got to take sociology, counseling.
So you've decided to join Food Not Bombs and travel around with them?
I would love to do that, actually.
He's right
over
there.
I actually do this. Not Food Not Bombs, but like in Philadelphia, we set up a phase and stuff with
all
these people.
You know, he just came from Philadelphia. Keith was at the convention.
So he probably knows my friend Vinny Straub.
You should go talk to him.
I think I will.
And we've been talking with?
Devaya.
Robert Devaya, remember to hug me anytime.
I love you, man. You're
thank
awesome.
You. Thank you.
I
need
to go talk to your friend over here, though.
All right,
he just said he survived the DNC. I survived it, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Sure. All right. Musical mic. I see you're sitting here with your guitar using it as some kind of a drum. What does this mean?
It means the drummer didn't show what I'm trying to cover.
Clickety-clack.
Clickety-clack, and we bring it back.
Any tickets downtown in the last week for you?
No, my last one was a month ago, sitting in a blue box outside the blue box.
I remember. We talked about that, your blue box crime days. Have you been occasionally attending the Freedom Sleepers on Tuesday night?
You know, I have not as much as I'd like. We like all like to do more, but thank God for loving God. He covers the bases somehow.
A rather optimistic point of view, Musical Mike.
And you? How goes it with Huff and Puff?
Huff is declining in numbers and continuing to do its Wednesday meetings at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And we have been talking with
Meriwether Mike and Bathrobes Pierre at the Food Not Bombs Saturday, July 30th.
That sounds accurate to me. Thank you, Mike.
Okay.
And in front of the bookshop Coonerty, we have a guitarist with an illegally spread out scarf or blankie on the ground and a small satchel case for donations. This is right in front of the Tom Scribner statue. It's inside one of the original disc boxes that's been here really for 13 years. There are actually two.
I don't know why I said guitarist. This is a harpist you can hear, and this is right in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, Bookshop Coonerty. It is, I think that probably that I'm kind of combining a variety of observations as I walk along Pacific Avenue. It's illegal to put a blanket on the ground on Pacific Avenue as a display device or as a something you're sitting on inside one of these occasional blue boxes that are there that are actually really, there's a very small number of them if you compare with sites that were used before and compare with the sites that are necessary. It's, again, part of the new aesthetic, which is the aesthetic of people, I think, who want to see less vibrant life on Pacific Avenue. And we'll hear a little more. It's a pretty tame series of interviews today. That's what's cooking. That's positive, though, in a certain sense, because we're seeing at least the folks that came to the Food Not Bombs meal, and that's where these interviews are taken from. New travelers were, well, dazzled by Santa Cruz. Or at least there was some dazzling going on.
Two of them here. One of them is about six or seven squares away, and the other is right here. Sounds good. Thank you. And coming up here is the Sonnet to Love on the Healing Stone display, laid out in the large boxes.
Here we go, man.
Looking good. Look at this stuff. I can't believe it. Pastoral pages, books, Bhagavad Gita.
The counterculture is mainstream.
And this is a fellow who previously had several tables of gemstones and jewelry and now has sort of converted it into a religious display where he is vending religious artifacts and doing a religious service as a way of perhaps staying within the law, so cynics would say. He's also very outspoken in his unwillingness to give interviews without being paid for them, though I think on this occasion he was a bit more forthcoming. His name is Ja, I believe, or at least that's the name I've heard him give. And he's often in front, of, right across from the Cinema 9 is where you'll find him if you're interested in his either his religious approach or his handicrafts.
Here, here. And it looks like this man has the largest box in town. Look
and
at this.
And it feels like there's room for plenty more to come perform with me.
I hope so. I hope.
And by that I mean there are, most of the blue boxes are 2x3 squares wide, which is 4 feet by 6 feet, if you look up and down Pacific Avenue as you walk along. There are very few that are larger, and that was done at the request of a couple of council members who wanted to allow for the spontaneous arrival of musical groups who didn't have the time or get it together to get a permit, which is what the majority wanted them to do, which is what the staff insisted would be the best way to control the, I don't know, unrestrained chaos in the downtown area as they see it. Of course, it's nothing of the kind, but that's what they are painting it as. So there was a group of children doing some nice singing inside one of these larger boxes, as also, I believe, Ja was in a larger box. There are two of them. One is in front of the, across from the Cinema 9, and the other is up a bit further. I guess it's where Verizon used to be. If you're, I think Verizon has moved. Maybe it's still there. Anyway, let's continue this rather tame tour of Pacific Avenue.
Because we are improvisational in the nature of our performance and the spirit of our performance.
Well, I know you yourself are oftentimes a performer. I've seen you playing the drums here.
Life is a performance.
Indeed.
Whether you like it or not. So we have actively chosen to improv our way through life.
I'm impressed with your display. I've never seen all the sonnets and various I don't know how we describe these, prints of different poems.
These are illuminated manuscripts.
Illuminated manuscripts of a sort. Plus, of course, some healing stones, perhaps.
Negative, sir. These are the stones I am working on.
Illegally working downtown on your handicraft, eh, mister?
I am not allowed to distribute my items that are for ascension.
I see.
And it's actually, it's illegal to actually create, other than a painting or something in writing, or a finished product, I guess is how it's described, strangely enough, anything downtown, inside or outside the blue boxes. And don't ask me what that means. I'm just reporting the unintelligible bad news that I got from the ordinance, the so-called Vanish the Vendors Ordinance that was passed by the city council this spring. City attorney can be contacted, perhaps, or possibly Scott Collins for a clarification of that. I may actually do that. In fact, I think I'll make a note of that. I can bring it to your attention, his latest wisdom on that subject. Scott Collins is the assistant to the assistant city manager. And we're running up against the clock here. Uncle Dennis should be in the studio soon, or at least it's his time for the Cream to the Dreg show. So let's finish this off.
See, because they are not protected under the freedom of religion.
Sadly.
So we have invented a new item called an illuminated manuscript, and it is a message to those in power.
Are you the illuminator?
No.
Okay. Don't tell anybody that, please.
I am a collaborator.
A collaborator. I see.
And I am here to remind those in power that the counterculture is unstoppable. The counterculture is a runaway train. So get out of the way.
Nicely put,
Hallelujah.
Counterculture man.
We're unstoppable. It's like a waterfall. You can't stop a waterfall.
And it's all wet, but that's good.
We're breathing, we're living, we're fermenting. We are the counterculture.
And we've been listening to that countercultural expert who is backing away from me very rapidly, very spryly as well, I might add. We will leave it at that. You can guess the identity of this man.
Expect us.
Thank you, sir. And a bit up the street in front of Verizon Wireless, we have a group of younger... that's been set up outside the sacred brass box, guitar, and then an instrument I don't recognize, which has a keyboard on it, which you blow through at the same time. And it's actually, people are sitting down next to a building. All right, nicely done. What's the name of your group?
We're the Cousins, the Cousin Band.
And how often are you down here?
Once a week or once every other week.
And how long do you stay down here?
An hour or two.
Yeah. And little jam sessions.
And what's your name?
I'm Sayla.
I'm Eden.
I'm Chase.
I'm Emma.
I'm Curran.
And you're playing the...
melodica.
And you're playing your voice.
And the violin. My voice and the ukulele.
And
the guitar, the violin, the mandolin, the piano. We all play it all.
You didn't need a permit to do anything.